Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
Time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today, the movie is the second in a series celebrating people we've lost in 2023. The movie, Fiddler on the Roof, released in 1971, is celebrating the actor Topol, who passed away on March 8th of last year. With me are Ken.
Tradition.
And Ted.
We're going to New York, America. We'll be neighbors.
And I'm Eric. You may ask, how did the tradition get started? I'll tell you, I don't know. What is tradition? And because of our traditions, every one of us knows who he is and what God expects him to do. That's right. Fiddler on the Roof is the movie we're going to be talking about here. So Ken, give us a quick synopsis of this one.
Oscar-winning adaptation of the Broadway musical about life among the Jewish community of a pre-revolutionary Russian village. A poor milkman determined to find good husbands for his five daughters consults the traditional matchmaker and also has a word with God.
All right. Particulars, Ted.
Fiddler on the Roof was directed by Norman Jewison with a screenplay by Joseph Stein. It's based off of the novel Tevye and His Daughters by Sholem Al-Haykham. It's also based off of the Broadway musical Fiddler on the Roof by Joseph Stein, Jerry Bock, and Sheldon Harnick. It has a running time of 181 minutes, a release date of November 3rd, 1971. It had a budget of $9 million. It had a box office gross of $83.3 million. On Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score is a certified fresh 80%, and it has an audience score of 92%. Fiddler on the Roof stars Topol as Tevye, the milkman, Norma Crane as Golda, his wife, Rosalind Harris as Zeidel, the oldest daughter, Michelle Marsh as Hodel, the second daughter, Neva Small as Shava, the third daughter, Molly Picon as Yenta, the matchmaker, Paul Mann as Laser Wolf, the butcher, Leonard Frey as Motel, the tailor, Paul Michael Glazer as Perchik, Ray Lovelock as Fiedka, Elaine Edwards as Sprinza, the fourth daughter, Candy Bonstein as Bielka, the fifth daughter, and Tuta Lemkow as the fiddler on the roof.
All right. Thanks for those particulars there, Ted. So when was the first time you gentlemen saw this movie? For me, it was this week.
You'd never seen it before?
Never seen it before in my life. First time.
Oh, wow.
I was very, very young. I was probably 8 or 9, probably when I first saw it. And to be honest with you, as a kid, I didn't understand it. So I really never came back to it till just now.
My mom and dad were big fans of this movie. So I saw this when I was little as well. We had it on the 2-disc VHS tape copy of the movie.
The double VHS, because yeah, it's so damn long.
Yeah, double VHS. And
the double VHS, the double VHS.
My mom and dad were big fans of the 60s and then the early 70s musicals. So we had quite a few of those on VHS and we would watch them. So yeah, when I was little. So it brings me back to when I was younger.
Simpler times.
Yes, very much.
Growing up in the Ukraine. Yep.
Yep. Being forced out of my village.
Of course, of course. Well, Ken, give us an appetite here for part one of this movie we're going to be talking about.
The film centers on the family of Tevye, a Jewish milkman from the village of Anatevka, which is in Russia. Tevye is terribly poor despite working hard, as are most of his Jewish neighbors. He and his wife, Goldie, have five daughters, which is another burden for Tevye to shoulder, as he cannot afford to dowry to marry them off. Life is very hard, and Tevye speaks not only of the difficulties of being poor, but also of the Jewish community's constant fear of harassment from their non-Jewish neighbors. The film begins with Tevye explaining to the audience that what keeps the community going is the balance they achieve through obedience to their ancient traditions. He also explains that a lot of the Jews in Russia is a precarious as a fiddler on the roof, trying to eke out a pleasant tune while not breaking their necks. The fiddler appears throughout the film as a metaphoric reminder of the Jews' ever-present fears and danger. While in town, Tevye meets Perchik, a student with modern religious and political ideas. Tevye invites him to live with them and his family in exchange for tutoring his daughters. Through Yenta, the matchmaker, Tevye arranges for his oldest daughter, Zaitel, to marry Laser Wolf, a wealthy butcher. However, Zaitel is in love with her childhood sweetheart, Motel, and begs her father not to make her marry the much older butcher. Tevye reluctantly agrees, and despite the humiliation suffered by Laser Wolf, Zaitel and Motel arrange to be married. At the wedding, an argument breaks out between the guests over whether a girl should be able to choose her own husband. Perchik addresses the crowd and says that since they love each other, it should be left for the couple to decide. He creates further controversy when he asks Tevye's daughter to dance with him, crossing the barrier between men and women. Eventually, the crowd warms up to the idea, and the wedding proceeds with great joy. Suddenly, a mob of locals arrive and begin attacking the Jews and their property. That's the end of part one.
So, Yenta, matchmaker or madam?
Matchmaker.
Are we sure about that?
Yeah, she is.
She's like bringing men in there and just kind of saying,
she
this one's
for
you.
She brings those two boys in, but that's in a different section
of the
movie.
She doesn't have her own brothel or something
I don't know about that. She's a little bit of a madam here, trying to hook up people.
She's a matchmaker. Essentially, she's a busybody.
Always in everybody else's business, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love the humiliation suffered by Laser Wolf.
Laser Wolf. That's an interesting thing because, you know, he goes to Yenta to try to get a match with Tevye's oldest daughter. I mean, he's a widower.
Creepy.
Yeah.
He's into the young women, young girls. I get it.
It's odd.
It's more odd when he goes up to Tevye and wants to be his son, right?
Let's give a little bit of grace. They are pretty drunk at that point.
True that.
They drank a lot of vodka right before he says that he's going to be his son. Because he's older than Tevye, so it's a little weird.
Tevye's like, I just wish I had somebody that was a little bit younger than myself.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Marry my 13-year-old daughter is okay.
No, she's 18.
Whatever. Okay. 18, all right.
That doesn't make it any better.
Okay. All right.
I mean,
didn't they establish ages at this particular point, though?
We know that Zaitel is of age to marry. Late teens, early 20s.
But if you think about it, and I'm not even going back to, let's say, the 1800s of America, a woman who is 15 or 16 is of age to be married. So this could even, she could be 14 or 15 years old.
There's still some states in the union. There's still some states in the union where 16 is the age of consent.
With consent.
So, yeah, it's a different time. It's really nebulous as to how creepy Laser Wolf really is. He's a widower. He's tired of living alone. Essentially, he's lonely. I don't think that there's really anything creepy sexually involved.
Oh, it's creepy because he's like, I like your daughter. She doesn't know who I am, but I like your daughter. Give her to me. I will give you pork and cow. Seriously, it is creepy.
He sees her every week at his butcher shop.
Which they show at the beginning of the movie.
That makes it perfectly right then, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
She's relatively intelligent, and he's not learned being a butcher, but he seems like a decent guy.
He doesn't seem like a really bad guy.
I don't think there's anything lecherous about him at all.
There is nothing lecherous about him. It's just the optics of it seem very weird.
Yeah, but this is treated like it's normal. I mean,
and I think it is. I think it is.
She even sings a song about it, you know, and she imitates.
Oh my goodness! The matchmaker. Everybody sings a song about something in this thing.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where to
have and to back it up? I mean, we go back to the beginning of the movie, and you know, we start off with the how does the town work? Everything.
We should probably start off with the beginning of the movie. Yeah, jumping here. The beginning of the movie starts off pretty cool. Him breaking the fourth wall and kind of talking to the audience. That's right. A great way to start it.
Sure.
Yeah.
He kind of explains the fiddler on the roof to a certain extent. How a fiddler balances on a roof by playing a simple tune is kind of how they balance life with all the difficulties, you know, but they try to make it seem like it's pleasant. And I like his character because he's very honest about being poor, but he tries to put a positive spin on it at the same time. And I love the start of the movie with the song Tradition and showing all aspects of their community. You know, all the different people that are there. And I think it sets up everything really nicely. I think it was the play that stated that they never wanted to have a person in the play or in the movie not have an actual character name. Everybody has a name to make it so that it makes it more like a community and they're all important, like equally important. I think that is representative in this movie very well.
No, I agree. It's a great way to start off the movie. And essentially, Tevye acts like the stage manager in our town. And he gives you a good overview of everything that you need to know about Anatevka and the Jewish condition that they live a precarious life like the fiddler on the roof, trying to balance its work to be happy. In my opinion, he's a very positive character. He takes everything really in stride.
Unless you cross him.
Well, there are some things where he does have to put his foot down. And he gets upset, anybody would when they're told that they have to leave their house.
Well, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about his daughter marrying outside of the Jewish faith.
Right. Well, that's
why. We'll get to that. That's the next part.
He is kind of like a Santa Claus character. He's very, very jolly. But cross him and he's not your best friend anymore.
I think he's a well-rounded character. I think he brings all aspects of an average person's life. An average person wants good for his children. He thinks he knows best for his children. He goes through the camera and debates through the camera about what he should do in all these situations. And that's no different than us debating, you know, the pros and cons of certain situations. I related very well to this character. And what I liked at the beginning here with the song Tradition and the introduction to the characters is him talking about the horse that's 6 years old to 12 years old. And everything's okay now. But then he goes and reminds them to start off the fight again.
That was right. Funny.
Yeah, it's...
That was comical.
Tevye is the reason that I really enjoy the movie. In my opinion, is such a positive character. But even he has his breaking point. And I love the fact that he has his conversations with God, but they're also conversations that allow the viewer into his inner dialogue. And I think that that's a really unique tool that is used here throughout the movie. And I like that he has a sense of humor when he's talking to God.
About the horse?
The horse, and then there's other times. It's
like, God, I understand why you torment me, but my horse?
my horse, right.
Yes. Before the Sabbath?
He's an endearing character. I can't help but smile when I think about him as a character.
What I like most about his character is the love that he has for his children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and his wife.
But we don't see that till later, until he looks at marriage in a love aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because his first daughter, Saito, doesn't want to get married to the butcher because she's in love with the tailor. Or actually, he's probably more like an apprentice at this particular point. But he sees why she doesn't want to marry the butcher and why she wants to marry Motel is because of love. And throughout the movie, it makes him realize, does his marriage have love? Because we don't know that at the beginning. Because at the beginning, him and his wife argue all the time. In fact,
you know, I love their relationship, though.
When she puts her foot down, he kind of he kind of backs off. He tries to be like the head of the family, the strong one. But as soon as she like puts her foot down, it kind of ends. Later on, we'll talk about the sewing machine. I need to go see the sewing machine, and she.
It's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Let's go home.
Favorite parts of the movie.
Because they're both on different playing fields, too, about their daughters a little bit. She's more tradition more than I think he is. She's ready to marry her daughter off to somebody who's very wealthy, like the butcher, where he's more somebody who has second thoughts. Even when he's at the butcher's house, he's debating about it.
That's a funny scene, too.
Oh, I like it. And when he comes in, and he is a really nice house, and he's like, all this from killing innocent animals, you know?
Right.
But it, I mean, because the house compared to everything else is beautiful looking.
He's living very comfortably. Laser Wolf is. But I know the part that I like is where Tevye thinks that Laser wants to buy his cow.
Talking about his daughter.
He goes, but then you'll want a second. And Laser Wolf's like, a second? What am I going to do with a second? He goes, the same thing you do with the first. It's stuff like that that it makes me laugh. It's comedic. And you feel for each character as well. And that's a thing, because it's so easy when you have a cast that's large, like kind of like what you said, that they wanted every character to have a name and have a point. It makes it more endearing, in my opinion. And even though Laser Wolf is a rough around the edges type of a guy, being a butcher, he's also an endearing character as well, that, you know, you feel for him because he's lonely, and Tevye does kind of go back on his word.
And it's kind of an embarrassment. I mean, right. To that small community, everybody knows. I mean, they go celebrate it over at the, whatever that is, a bar or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I mean, I can understand why he's frustrated. But
he's gracious. And he ends up, you know, giving the 5 chickens to Zytel and Moltel. And
then loses it.
Well, I mean, Tevye
did. He's bottling it in and bottling it in. He's like, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
Tevye kind of pushes them to the breaking point. Yeah,
he does, yeah.
But he still lost it.
I'm generally not a big dance type of a person, but I really enjoy the dancing. I like the bar scene.
The bar scene is the one that I wish they would cut a little bit, because this movie is 3 hours, and there's a couple of scenes that I would have kind of condensed, and this is one of them.
Who was that guy he was dancing with at the bar?
I don't know, but boy,
he was creepy looking.
Yeah, he was.
he is
really creepy looking.
There's something about those Russian dances. It's so intriguing to me that how that they can do that. And then the wine bottle dance at the at the wedding. That is just absolutely amazing to me how they can do that.
Wedding and everything they do with the wedding itself, one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. It's probably my second favorite part of the whole movie, but my first favorite part of the whole of this movie is the pretend dream sequence where he has to convince his wife, because he's going back on his promise, he's going to let Zytel.
Is that when they're in the cemetery?
Yes.
And they're all wearing that weird, creepy makeup.
But I like it. It's so cool because
it's so different.
It's different. Oh,
I really liked it. I mean, first of all, his wife is going into this story. Like, yeah, you're going to scare me, you know, type of thing. Because he's trying to convince her that her grandmother doesn't want the daughter to marry the butcher. That's the wrong thing. You know,
it's because it's her namesake.
Right. Mm-hmm. Funny and haunting. There's just so much going on into that. I really enjoy it. And the fact that they're in the middle of that, experiencing it together while he's telling the story and scaring, I think it's really well done.
That whole sequence is one of the reasons that the cinematographer won best cinematography for the Oscars that year. One of the things that I really is really catching about that, and Eric brought up the makeup and how kind of creepy it is, because you actually get the feeling that, you know, that they're dead people. It also has that pastel coloring on their clothes that really stands out from the black and white of everything else. I think that that contrast is really, really telling. To me, it's not only is it funny, but it's also beautifully shot and everything like that. I think it's a great sequence in the movie for sure. I love how he sets it up too. He's awake and he's trying to figure out how to do it, and he screams and scares the crap out of his wife.
And then pretends he's sleeping. Like, yeah, right, it's just a dream, right? Well, that's because she wears the pants in the family and he has to get it by her. That's the dynamic of their relationship.
It's pretty great. It's also, too, one of the endearing qualities of their relationship. He knows what he has to do. He doesn't want to do it, but he knows that he has to. Otherwise, he's going to be in big trouble. I think it's very relatable in a lot of senses. I really like their relationship. I think it's pretty funny.
Going back to the relationship with God, because, you know, I'm a person of faith, even though I'm not Jewish, you know, I'm Christian. I really relate to the relationship with God here. In fact, Tobol and the director, they had this big stick and they put like a whiteboard on top of it. And Tobol had to look at it all the time when he was talking to God. So every time he's talking to God, he's looking up at that. So he's having that conversation. I thought that was really good for consistency. But what I liked a lot about his conversations with God is they were very personal, like really one-on-one conversations with God. And he's a strong man of faith throughout the whole ordeal. And everything that he does is kind of based on faith. His character, for someone like me, really very relatable. And of course, being somebody of an older age and having children that are now 25 and 19, you know, trying to marry them off, I'm not sure if I'll get anything for them. So, but I could relate what it is to have children. I mean, he's got five and they're all daughters. For that time frame, having five daughters, he wanted to have a son to kind of balance the responsibilities all out.
It's also unique too, because having five daughters would have gone as a burden. And they kind of allude to that a little bit. A couple of the other minor characters kind of allude to that. But he never takes it as that. He looks at his family as a blessing rather than a burden. That also makes him entirely relatable because, I mean, as human beings, we do a lot of what we do based off of faith, whether it's faith in a religion or God or just faith in the hope that things will work out. His relationship to God is very, and I'm trying to come up with a different word than endearing, but it makes him more appealing to...
About admirable.
Yeah,
You have to admire his faith, and you have to admire his principles of what he sticks up for. The man is poor, the man's had a lot of heartache, but he looks at all the positives on his life. And even when the negatives come and kind of hit him one, two, left, right, he still stands by his faith and stands by his beliefs and his principles. Whether they're right or wrong or whether you agree with them or not, he doesn't wither. He stands by them. And you have to admire that.
You're right. He doesn't wither. However, he does think it out. He kind of asked himself.
He analyzes it.
He analyzes this with, I think, the help of his faith, which I really like, because, and we'll talk about more of that towards the end. But then there's the fiddler. The fiddler kind of represents that balance that we talked about earlier. He talks about a fiddler on the roof balancing himself off and a nice tune out of it. And so when we see the fiddler down below, when he gets the news, the bad guys are coming for a demonstration on his community. He's down. He even talks to God about, why did you have to give me this type of news on this day, right? And then the fiddler comes along and plays a happy tune to get him balanced. And we actually will see that also at the end of the movie. So the fiddler actually kind of helps balance him out. That's the purpose of the fiddler. So the fiddler kind of reminds him, this is a joyous occasion. Your daughter is engaged to be married. So I thought that was kind of a nice... these nice little dynamics with God and with the fiddler.
The fiddler also represents the Jewish condition as well. that they're always in a precarious position.
But I think this one fiddler, though, is for him. This one particular fiddler is his fiddler.
Yeah. You bring up, and we'll go a little bit into this, I guess he's like the town governor or something of that nature. He's the appointed head of the village of Anatevka. That's a tough position for him to be in. It doesn't seem that there's a conflict between the Eastern Orthodox Christians and the Jews in Anatevka. There's no animosity between the two sections.
No, they're like, you stay on your side of the fence, we'll stay on our side of the fence kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much, and yeah.
They have an understanding, and Tevye delivers them milk as well. Everybody knows each other, and they live in harmony, and this man is being tasked with creating tension because the Tsar, for whatever reason, has it out. I did find it interesting that the guy who was sent to the village to tell them that they needed to demonstrate and be harder on the Jews of Anatevka, he looked like a representation of V.I. Lenin. And it's really kind of an interesting choice that they used for him, because there's a lot there. They're not shy in that scene between him and this guy sent by the Tsar to go into a lot of the anti-Semitic tropes of, you know, Christ killer. It's really kind of a jarring type of a thing that, you know, there are people that in positions of authority that actually believe a lot of these things. Ken, you said, you know, we talk about the wedding at the end of this first section that we're talking about, and it's actually just before the intermission. They're told to disrupt something, but they disrupt the wedding. They tear things apart and just destroy the joy that they have. And it's so very sad. But at the end of that sequence, after, you know, Tevye looks to the sky again and asks why, the scenes that come after that, if this was Norman Jewison's intended point, but it's so eerily reminiscent of the Kristallnacht, the Night of the Broken Glass, that took place in, I think, 1936 in Germany, where they broke the windows of the different shops, the Jewish shops and everything like that. It's
all right. So we can agree that the Cossacks and the Jews didn't get along.
And if we were casting, Mel Gibson would have had a part in this movie. So.
He would have been a Cossack, yes.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
Thinking about the wedding, though, and I understand we were talking about the end of it and how everything turned out, but there's so much great stuff that happens during the wedding. First, they all are walking with those candles all the way up to the marriage. They get married. They have the dances. And then, of course, we were talking earlier about Wolf losing his cool. But then we also see Perchik, who I'm not big fan of, unless he's starring in Starsky and Hutch. He invites Hodel to dance with him. And this is against tradition, right? This is a man and a woman dancing with each other. How dare they? And I'm thinking, what other dances should there be besides a man and a woman dancing with each other?
Very Footloose-esque. Yes, that's what I was
waiting
thinking.
For Kevin Bacon to come in the middle and just kind of do his little thing.
Right.
But I liked how the fact that they go to their rabbi and they ask the rabbi if it's prohibited. Kosher. And he's like, not really, you know.
Not technically.
Technically, no. But then they went ahead and everybody started dancing and having, you know, a good time.
Well, it's tradition. You're breaking a tradition right there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of the marriage part is breaking tradition. And I think that's a great thing about this wedding is we get to see all that. And of course, it ends terribly, but there's so much wonderful things that are going on during this wedding. And you know something bad's going to happen because the good stuff that's happening. And you already heard at the beginning of the movie that, you know, there's going to be a demonstration. And you wondered why they chose this. Was this chosen? They just happened to come upon this. Thinking about the guy who, you know, you were talking about, who's possibly the governor. Did he choose this event? I know he didn't want to.
I don't think he did, but I think the people, the Cossacks or the town people or the peasants, whatever you want, who kind of took it into their own hands to probably knew about it and said, hey, this is a disruption. Let's do it. Because they don't really think anything of these people, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I think he had some knowledge. He would, you know, considering he knew about the marriage, he came at the end
and he said, you know what? He probably thought about it. Say, you know what? This isn't right. And he just he came there and he ended it.
Well, yeah, right or wrong.
He's very torn.
He's very torn, extremely torn.
Rip torn?
And
he doesn't want to get a bullet in the head.
Right. He doesn't want to be replaced.
Yeah, replaced is killed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
He also is in a very precarious position. And he actually likes Tevye. Oh.
So here, I have a question for you. This first part of the movie, this movie's 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
I already said what I felt like I would cut out. I would also cut out the little song after they get it, when they get engaged.
All the singing? Yeah, cut it out.
I don't very much care for that. Is there something in this first part that you guys wish that they would have gotten rid of?
Of the fiddler.
You just don't like the fiddler, huh?
He's like a little lizard man on the roof like playing a little his fiddle. Leprechaun. I get it. I know. I heard all. I understand. It's a metaphor. It's an allegory. I get it. And I know the movie is called Fiddler on the Roof. The character just annoys the life out of me. He doesn't talk. He weighs like 8 pounds. I think he's a lizard, and he just plays that stupid fiddle constantly. And it just annoyed me. And I know it's a musical. It's called Fiddler on the Roof.
That guy who's playing the fiddle there isn't the real one playing it. They actually
It's Chuck Stern.
Yeah, they had to go and get him. He was actually playing for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at the time, and they brought him in to originally, they didn't have an opening piece for the film. So they had to write a score for the beginning with his violin. They got the top-notch violinist at the time.
Well, you had John Williams help on this one.
Oh, yeah, right. John Williams. Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. You don't go wrong with John Williams.
Yeah.
And this is pre-Star Wars, so this is, John Williams really making a big name for himself here with this
film. Well, he did Jaws. He's done a few.
This is 71.
71. Jaws is 75. Oh, yeah, you're right. No, you're right. It's pre. You're right. This is early, early John Williams.
This is also very early in Itzhak Stern's brilliant career as well. Williams and Stern would also later collaborate on the absolutely wonderful score for Schindler's List. But if there's two things that I would cut from this first section, I'm not a big fan of the one section that, Ken, that you talked about, the post engagement singing sequence. It's not my favorite. The other thing that's not my favorite is when the three daughters are singing about the matchmaker and everything.
I like that, especially when she does the matchmaker voice. I actually enjoy Matchmaker. It's actually a fun little tune, I think.
It's not that I don't like it, but if you're putting a gun to my head and forcing me to cut something, it would probably be those two things. But for the most part, I actually really enjoy the music here. It never gets on my nerves or anything like that for me. It's just...
You're a better man than me. Musicals for me are hit or miss. There are musicals out there I like, but then, it's either I love it or it's just not my thing.
I think that comes with the territory. I think we've discussed, in the past, comedy is subjective, and so is
or musicals or horror movies. Or
if I Was a Rich Man. I'm not a big fan of that song, even though it gets stuck in my head.
It's an earworm. There's
one song from this movie that everybody knows. It's that song, right. But I, for whatever reason, I just don't like the da 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 da. I just feel like you just couldn't figure out any additional words for it, so you just let them say, just go da 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 da.
You know what it is? It's Weird Al Yankovic's. This song is just 6 words long. The George Harrison.
Yeah.
You're right. It's like 4 or 5 words over again, and him then going da 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 da. It is a little annoying. You're right. It
gets a little annoying after a while. So, but I enjoy especially this first part of the movie. I mean, Topol does. He does a great job of just humanizing this guy, but his physicality with his dance and his movements is just something special. When the director picked him, because he thought about the original actor who was in the play. We talked about him before in the producers.
Oh, Zero Mostal.
Zero Mostal.
But he thought Zero was too Americanized and he was too all about getting laughs and things of that nature. He saw Topol during the failure of the roof in England. He just liked his approach better. Just a universal Jew is how he put it, where you could fit him in any type of situation. I'm not a big fan of anything else that Topol's done. I mean, I look Flash Gordon, and whenever he acts in that movie, I just cringe every single time. It's just totally horrible. But here, it's a perfect marriage of jumping from the stage to screen. There's no wrong movement here. Every scene that he's in, he's enjoyable. I mean, you just love every bit of it. How he tackles every situation with grace, but just how he handles his daughter's not wanting to marry the butcher and having to tell his wife. And then dealing with everybody in town. But, you know, like I said, the constable and things like that. He just has the right way of approaching everything. And it doesn't come off being fake or anything. I think the best word I have for him is he's just genuine. He's just a very genuine character.
I think everyone admires him in the town. They look up to him.
Right. And I mean, he's a poor man who doesn't
have
anything.
They're all poor.
Maybe the butcher's
not very poor, but they're all poor.
But I think he's kind of like even on the lower scale. He's got a lame horse. There's a lot of things working against him that I don't think other people in the neighborhood have. But I think why everybody likes him is because he doesn't treat anybody differently. Everybody's kind of treated on equal playing field.
Even the stranger who comes in, the Persek, Paul Michael Perchick. Glazer's character.
Yeah.
You know, he welcomes him with open arms. Hey.
Yeah.
Come live with me. Teach my children.
And he finds he has different ideas.
Yeah. And he finds that interesting. He doesn't dismiss it. Even though he's a big tradition kind of guy, he's intrigued by new ideas, different approaches. And I think that makes his character, I guess you could say, endearing.
He's genuinely curious. He's curious. And you can tell that, you know, if given the opportunity, he could have been a very smart person, as he is genuinely curious. And when something makes sense to him, he can apply it to real life. I think that's why he comes to Perchik's defense. You know, everybody is kind of making fun of him in that initial interaction. And they don't hide exactly who Perchik is as far as telling us who he is. He's
an undercover cop, right?
Yeah. And he's a communist, straight up. They do tease him for some of his beliefs, especially, you know, when he says that money is essentially the root of all their problems. And Tevye goes, well, I wish I could have all those problems.
Right.
Or when he's teaching the kids about contracts and things of that nature, like the Bible teaches us that.
Yeah, it's about Jacob. Yeah. He's a Bolshevik. It's interesting. He is looked at as a positive character. That's kind of a different take on the whole situation, especially when you're looking at, this was produced in 1971. The musical was in the 60s, and that's at the height of the Cold War. And the fact that, you know, that a Bolshevik would be looked upon as not as a negative type of a character. I wonder if this was the 50s, if Fiddler on the Roof even gets made.
Because of the Red Scare and stuff?
The McCarthy era. Communism here is not looked upon as the root of all evil. The Tsar is looked upon as the ultimate bad guy here.
But you have to think about that. At the turn of the century, under Tsar Nicholas II, they were the last reigning monarchs of Russia. So the Bolsheviks coming in are the good guys. I mean, ultimately, we know they had bad ideas.
A guy like Argo, when we talked about Argo, you know, the revolutionaries, you know, because of the Shah, how bad things were with the Shah, and you have good intentions. So you, mm-hmm. the communist, and the Bolsheviks, or maybe at that time, you know, in 1905 when this is set, I believe.
Somewhere in that vicinity.
Somewhere in that vicinity. Maybe good intentions, have good ideas mm-hmm. that are better than what they currently are under. And I think that by maybe the midnight 60s, you can get away with that, because a lot of times we've found out that good ideas sometimes can lead to bad things.
Well, you know, bottom line, it's history. Lenin comes into power in the late teens because of the Bolshevik revolution. So with Perchak being a communist.
And with the help of the Germans as well.
Exactly. Well, yes, I know. It makes perfect sense for the movie that you have that one character who's a little mm-hmm. revolutionary in his thinking, because early on, that's where it started. And this, of course, is where it leads to. I thought that was a very interesting character to add into.
Mm-hmm.
Or to add into the original screenplay, into the original Broadway
very much
musical.
So.
He's annoying.
You think he's annoying?
I think he's annoying. Yeah.
Compared to the rest of the cast, he's like the whitest American there. You can tell clearly. You might as well put David Soul in the character. I mean, he definitely sticks out like a sore thumb compared to all the other ones.
But that also makes the character also more interesting, because
he doesn't have any facial hair. I think that's the main thing. Seriously.
But he is also the fish out of water.
Yeah.
And so having him look different and everything really puts a spotlight on him as being the forward thinker. I like Perchik's character. I won't get into the politics of what I believe, but
yeah, we don't need to go with the politics. We know you're a communist. So Ken, why don't you take us into section two of this movie?
Later as Perchak, as we were just talking about, prepares to leave to work for the revolution, he tells Hodel that he loves her, and she agrees to marry him. When they tell Tevye, he is furious that they have decided to marry without his permission, but he eventually relents because they love each other. Weeks later, Perchak is arrested and exiled to Siberia. Hodel decides to travel to join him there. Meanwhile, Tevye's third daughter, Hava, has fallen in love with a young Russian man and eventually works up the courage to ask Tevye to allow her to marry him. Tevye concludes that while he could accept his honor daughters choosing their own husbands, he cannot allow Hava marrying a non-Jew, and in fact abandoning the Jewish faith, and forbids her to associate with him, but she decides to elope with him and marries him in a Russian Orthodox church. Finally, the Jews are notified that the Russian government will force the Jews to leave their village. They have 3 days to pack it up and leave. Tevye and his family and friends begin packing up to leave, heading to places like New York, Chicago, the Holy Land, Cleveland, not knowing what's in store for them. Just before the credits, Tevye spots the fiddler and motions to him to come along, and the film ends with the fiddler following Tevye down the road playing the tradition theme. The end.
Who's buying all their land? You got 3 days. Who's buying it? Not the Jews. Are the Russians buying it for like nothing? Who's buying all his cows and his lame horses and all that stuff?
Well, they said somebody, probably a non-Jewish family, has already bought it. He goes into the barn and talks to the animals and tells them about the new owner.
It makes me sad every time I watch it. It makes me want to cry.
Don't cry.
It's a sad ending. It really is. It's not a very
I feel so bad for those cows and the horse. His relationship with the horse, even though the horse is lame,
it's better than his wife. No, seriously, he has a better relationship with his animals, I think, than his wife.
Well, at the beginning, but I think towards the middle of the film, I think once he finds out that she loves him and he loves her, I think their relationship changes.
His relationship with his horse, even though the horse is lame and he has to drag the cart, he still brings the horse with him every morning. That part really, really gets to me. It makes me very sad when he has to say goodbye to his animals. You know,
well, there's the extended cut where he like just takes a shotgun and goes, oh.
Oh, wow.
I'm just kidding. There's no
extended. Jesus, criminy.
Line it up with the glue factory. Is that where you're going with this
Lord,
one?
Man.
Wow. Nice.
But even at the end, his outlook on everything at the end, though, too, it is a sadder ending. This is one of the things that makes Tevye so, I think, almost iconic as far as a character goes, whether it be screen or stage. He kind of takes it in stride, and he makes the best out of the bad situation. He finds somebody who he knows will take care of his cows and will take care of his horse and will treat them nice and be good to them. Hava marries an Eastern Orthodox Catholic.
Gets married in the church.
He gets married in the church. And even at the end, when he's kind of disavowed her, he still says, under his breath, he still says goodbye to her.
Which he allows his daughter to actually, God be with you.
God be with you.
That comes from the father. So the daughter knows it comes from the father. So yes. She now have, you know, they have that relationship still there. But I love the fact the first daughter gets her way. The second daughter gets her way. But the third daughter, he goes back to that debate thing where he's talking to the camera and he's talking about the pros and the cons on that. But he still says no because of his faith. And I kind of respect that. If he would have not done that, for me, then I would have said that he would have just done that no matter what. Any situation that he would just cave in.
That's what I was talking about. You have to admire him for his morals and his religious beliefs. Whether you agree with them or not, you have to admire someone that still stands up even when the chips are down.
Right. And I think that situation is a perfect example of all-around character where he has to put a stop somewhere when it comes to his daughters. Now, in this situation, the daughter has to be dead to him. That's pretty drastic. I mean, it's pretty hard to do. And it's really hard on him. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, he's going to lose his farm and they have to move. I really like him for that. And I also didn't like him when he does say that, may God be with you. Because even though he's holding on strong to his beliefs, he's allowing his beliefs to have a little flexibility there. I'm not going to agree with what you're doing, daughter. I disagree with it totally. However, I still love you. I still want you to be a part of my life in some type of way. You know, he comes to that realization at the end, and I love that for his particular character.
Like you said, if he just continually, if he gives in, then all of a sudden he's a different character. Like Eric mentioned, he still has a moral code, and he's willing to look at things from a different perspective, and he's willing to go so far. And I think that he even mentions that in the one speech. When they're trying to make that decision, he goes, how can I sacrifice everything that I believe? I've already pushed my beliefs to the breaking point here where we've changed tradition. It's a bridge too far. And, you know, it's sad. I mean, because you feel for her, she falls in love with somebody who's of a different faith.
I know I that the movie is 3 hours long, but doesn't it seem like these people like fall in love with anyone who says hi to them? It's like, Father, I've fallen in love with this stranger. Father, you know, it's like every other daughter is like falling in love with someone.
It does come off.
Yes,
Yeah, but I think it's because we don't realize how much time has passed. I mean, I know. Saito, she's already having a child at this particular point.
Yes, exactly.
So we might talk about a year or two before the third daughter is even getting married. So we don't know how long that relationship is. And it's not like they have a big pick of the litter if you're being married off to people in their 60s by the matchmaker, okay? If you're getting somebody around your old age, you're probably going to be like, okay, I'm gonna grab onto that and hold on to it, right?
And Anatevka is a small village. So you're right. The pool is very small. And
because the matchmaker brought those like 9-year-olds over to line them up. I mean, it was
that's pretty funny,
right?
Too.
Well, yeah, they didn't have farmers.com.
This is the fat
then,
one,
so.
You know, it's like, okay, yeah,
we're gonna go to like an unbelievable type of a thing, like what you're mentioning there, Eric. Everybody says hi and gets married. The fact
I know it's time because lapse. It's a small, take it into effect
because it's a small village. This is the first time that Tevye or any of the anybody in that community has had this issue where two different faiths living closely together, that two people have fallen in love. That's a little bit of a stretch. That this wouldn't have been something that they would have had to have approached before.
It's probably happened. It's just been squashed by a father who was maybe a little bit more of a tyrant when it came to, or no flexibility. We are talking about a congregation here of tradition that they don't believe in going outside of tradition. I can see where it maybe this is like the first rumblings. And if you have one daughter that does it, then the other daughter does it. I think this movie is more, or this play and movie is really just focusing on, you know, the progression of things changing. You know, it just happened. They did it through the one family. They could have done this with one family here, one family there, one family there. But I think it's easier to do it here with one family because the one daughter, okay, she doesn't agree with the matchmaking, chooses her own guy. Okay, what's the next step? All right, well, I'm going to get married, but I don't need my father's permission. Okay, what's the next step? I'm going to get married, but it's going to be to somebody outside my faith. So, and that's why we have the $3. But I understand where you're coming from. They should have had this problem beforehand. Most likely they did, but we're talking about a play and a movie here, right?
I know, so, we're reading into it a little bit there. But yeah, it was just kind of funny because like every problem he had was, you know, oh, the daughter's marrying this person, or oh, the daughter wants to marry this person, or the butcher wants my daughter. I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, he's got the litter there that everyone wants, huh?
I think we mentioned a little while ago, he is respected in the village. Even though he's the milkman, he knows everybody and they know that he's a reasonable person.
Just out of curiosity, does the fourth or the fifth girl like become marry a Satanist or something like that? I mean, yeah.
Well,
what's the next progression after?
I shouldn't say that.
America in the early teens.
I don't want to.
They're going to go outside of a male kind of relationship.
That's kind of what I was going for. Yeah. Just completely pushing the boundaries. Early.
But, you know,
I love your lame horse, father. Please.
Yeah.
But I love the horse, daddy.
Well, he's going to be in for a real culture shock because they're going to Chicago.
No, they're going to New York. Chicago.
Oh, they're going to New York. That's right.
Laser Wolf's going to Chicago.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. To be a butcher, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Is it Laser or Lazar?
Laser.
Is it Laser? I like Laser better.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like a disc jockey.
Pretty cool name.
Laser Wolf in the morning.
You know? Right?
Yeah.
But so yeah,
he's a butcher in Chicago. This family's going to New York. Yeah, Stockyard, exactly.
That's why the Chicago Bulls are the Chicago Bulls.
You got the one woman going to Jerusalem.
The Holy Land.
Which means that a lot of time has transpired. Because that means that World War I, the time frames are hard here.
And, Jerusalem's name has never changed.
Jerusalem's name has never changed, but them being welcomed in Jerusalem at that time.
Are they really welcome wherever they go? Let's be honest. I mean, maybe she's got
family there.
The nation of Israel. She didn't say Persia.
She said Jerusalem.
The Holy Land.
Holy Land.
So it's been the Holy Land.
The one that's the most disturbing is the daughter that they say they're moving to Krakow. Because
Poland, you know, but that's not Poland. 1930s Poland. You still got 20 some odd years.
Be there.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's not going to end well for them in the 30s. But yeah, it kind of foretells a little bit of history.
Yeah.
Way to bring us down, Ted.
I know. Yeah. Sorry.
I wanted to bring up because I know how much Eric loves the fiddler. At the end of the movie, where they're leaving. And the fiddler is behind Tevye,
stalking him,
and waves him to come over. I think Tevye is extremely depressed at this particular time and needs the fiddler. Because I don't think the fiddler is real. I don't think he's
figment
a real person.
Of his imagination. Thank you. I was going to bring that up. Yes.
He's a figment of his imagination, but he needs him to balance himself, because right now he's extremely sad, and he needs his fiddler to bring him even. So
I think it's that's a figment of his imagination. I agree.
Does that make it a little bit better for you with the Fiddler, or you still hate that character?
I hate the character, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I thought maybe I was the only one that was thinking that at the end. I'm like, he just is.
That's my
like
personal opinion. So.
Twice in the movie, he doesn't interact with any other characters in the movie.
Right.
No.
No one else brings up a fiddle or any type of musical instrument in the movie at all, but yet he's so prominent. So I was thinking that towards the end. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, no, it's something that I was actually going to bring up too, that I thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good way, Ken, that you described him as a figment of his imagination that helps him center himself, and he
it's
can.
It's not the voices in his head. It's the music in his head that kind of is like soothing, a happy place, happy thought.
Happy Gilmore. Yeah.
Happy Gilmore.
It's still a sad ending, though. It's still
it is. It's a. I mean, it's like Tevye described at the beginning. He goes, maybe that's why we always wear our hats.
Because they're always possibly ready to travel.
It's a tale as old as
the Old Testament.
I mean, centuries.
The Jewish community has always been moving around. They're always outsiders in any place that they've been. And once they've established themselves, they get kicked out.
Or once everything turns around and becomes successful, then they're ostracized and kicked out. I mean, it happened all over Europe throughout the Renaissance and the Middle Ages as well. It's just that's how things would operate. I guess the Russian government didn't really care for the movie or the musical based off of the fact that they were critical of the pogroms that were set up in Russia and things of that nature. They didn't like the way that it was portrayed.
Truth hurts.
History's not here for your enjoyment.
Don't say history's not whitewashed, because it sure is sometimes.
Oh no!
Oh, lately it is.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get to our reviews, I wanted to touch on some characters really quick, because I really like the rabbi in this movie. I love when they go to him for prayers, and like, what's the prayer for the czar? And the prayer is, oh yeah, there's a prayer for it. The prayer is that he stays the heck away from the rest of us, right? So there's just little characters here and there that I really appreciate. Though I didn't like the beggar. I felt like he was like a waste. Like there was nothing to him outside of, like, we see three scenes, I think, with him just coming in and beg.
Like at the wedding. So,
Ken hates poor people.
I know.
I hate poor people. Get away from me, poor person.
No.
But is there a character that you like, you guys really enjoy, that we haven't really touched on?
No.
You picked the character that I would have picked. I like the rabbi a lot. He's very honest, and he's very open with his interpretation of the sacred documents. He's a very interesting character, that's for sure. One of the things that I'd like to touch on is some of the music. I know that a lot of people really, they criticize Sunrise Sunset as being too emotionally manipulative. But there's something about that song. I like that a lot.
How is it emotionally manipulative?
Oh, it very much is. Listen to the lyrics. It's designed to really tug at your heartstrings.
It's one of my least favorite songs in the movie, to be perfectly honest with you. It's not bad. I don't hate it. It's just, if there's a song to get rid of, it's in my top three.
It's ironically, it's one of the most famous songs to come out of the movie.
Mine's Surrey with the Fringe on Top. Oh, wait, wrong musical. Sorry.
That's Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yes. Different story. You talk about whitewashing history.
But Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Oh. Don't get me started on that one, man. That musical just echoed in my head for days.
It's not one of my favorites either. I enjoy the music for the most part, and it's touching when it needs to be, and it's upbeat when it needs to be as well. So I think the integration of the music into the movie is really good. And just one quick thing about Norman Jewison.
He's not a Jew.
He's not a Jew, and he had to tell the producers
of the movie that
he wasn't Jewish.
And they're like, sure, you're not Norman. No.
But he also went on to direct the movie version of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
And Ken, you had mentioned Zero Mostel.
The Broadway.
Being up for Tevye in the movie. Well, Zero Mostel's son plays King Herod in Jesus Christ Superstar. So, and King Herod is one of my favorite characters from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Boy, I haven't seen that in decades.
His song is my favorite song from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Maybe one of these days we'll do that.
Maybe
right?
Not. Maybe.
Maybe not.
Hey, you know, really quick, I wanted to add
some hate for Jesus Christ Superstar.
I don't know. I already dealt with this movie, but we'll
you don't
see
like
you.
Murray. You don't like Murray Head?
I just wanted to talk really quick here about who was up for the main part here. There were a lot of people that wanted to get into this movie, including the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra.
Oh, that would have been
awesome.
Yeah,
I don't see Frank as Tevye.
Frank, Dean, and Sammy. Yes.
An Italian from Long Island.
I love
it. I don't
it.
See him as a middle-aged
no
Jewish
facial
man.
Hair. Just... Oh yeah, it would have been perfect. It would have been awesome.
Danny Kaye another one. Big time. Danny Kaye.
Dancing up
don't
the aisles.
Don't see that either.
Danny Kaye
don't
just
see
screams
that either.
Jew, right? Just screams Jew.
Well, I mean, you can pull off some of the singing and the dancing, but the look, I just don't know how you're going to pull that one off.
The flaming redhead? Absolutely. It just screams. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I saw both of those as well, when I was doing the research.
But... It would have been a totally different dance scenes, huh?
It would have been so bad.
It would have been lavish. It would have been like lavish, like just big lavish scenes coming out of nowhere.
Oh, my God.
The scene would have really been good with Danny Kaye. Probably would have been the dream sequence.
Oh yeah,
it would have just been a lavish Hollywood dream sequence.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Danny Kaye playing maybe the rabbi. I could see Danny Kaye playing the rabbi because there's a little comic.
Oh no,
touch
he wanted
there.
To be Tevye.
But he wanted to be Tevye. Yeah, there was just a lot of people that were lining up to want to be in this musical.
Mm-hmm. It was at the time. The longest running musical on Broadway.
Yeah.
It is a very popular musical. Very
successful.
It still
is. It's still an incredibly popular musical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, we talk about, because this the reason we're doing it is because of Topol. Up until like 2015, he was still doing regional productions of Fiddler on the Roof.
Because wasn't he like in his mid-30s when he did this originally?
Yeah, he was 35 when he did the movie, which is kudos to the makeup and art direction for the movie. This is the role that he was born to play. Kind of like how
wasn't
Rex
Zoltan
Harrison
or what's his name from Flash Gordon?
Yeah, no.
Zoltar or whatever it was.
It's kind of like Rex Harrison for My Fair Lady.
That's true.
Rex Harrison played the character from My Fair Lady close to his death as well. Sometimes an actor will find the character he was born to play, and this is definitely true.
If anyone besides Stifler has been typecast into a character, it is Topol. It is Topol.
Yeah. Sean William Scott.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Let's wrap this up because I need to go to the bathroom.
All right.
We're going to keep that in the podcast.
Sounds good to me.
Ken's got a whiz. All right. So
no, The Wiz is a completely different musical. It's Michael Jackson.
Then there's the porn version of The Wiz, a completely different musical.
Oh, that's a damn. Yeah, now we're talking about it.
That's going to get edited out. So.
That is Ken's a bridge too far.
The Wiz.
You hit my total moment.
Ken, why don't you start us off with your review? Who are you aligning yourself with?
I'm aligned with Judith Christ from New York Magazine / Vulture. She says what really counts is that this universal story of tradition, of generations, of man and God surmounts inevitable and is in many ways refreshed. Even Tevye is somehow refurbished by Topol. I agree with mostly what she's saying here because I really feel like it's a universal story. I think it not only hits the Jewish community, but it's good for all type of communities because I think we all can relate to these characters. I went into this movie dreading the 3 hours. And in fact, the 3 hours was a bit long. I needed actually to take a break in between. And I think that's why we have an intermission, because people need a break from a 3 hour musical. To me, really the only drawback of this movie is the length of the movie. Maybe one or two songs could have been cut, but Topol is basically the whole movie. He carries this from beginning to end. You know, not saying anything bad about the rest of the actors. They do just a fine job. He is just such an amazing character. This musical would be nothing, of course, without him. But he really elevates this musical for me. And because of that, I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 hooks.
4 out of 5 hooks?
Yes.
Nice job. All right. First time I've seen the movie, obviously, was this week. I'll be honest, not my cup of tea. And I think Joseph Gelmis with Newsday kind of agrees with me on this one. He says, it's a respectable, lively, and pictorially accomplished movie musical that develops hardly any emotional voltage and which is curiously joyless. Wasn't too crazy about the movie, nor was I. Like I said, I'm hit or miss on musicals. This is one that's just kind of a miss for me. It was 3 hours. Way too long. I couldn't get any of the songs. Besides Topol and Starsky, there's no stars in this movie at all. It's just not for me. Not my thing. I've never seen it on Broadway. Probably never will. I'm probably never going to watch the movie again. But I'm glad I did. So now when I speak to someone that actually is talking about Fiddler on the Roof, I will know what the hell they're talking about. And I would agree that this role was made for Topol, and I think he is the shining light of this movie. I am going to give it kind of an average 2.5 hooks for me. Take us home, Ted.
Well, the critic that I most agree with is Charles Champlin from the LA Times. He says that Fiddler on the Roof has been done not only with such artistry, but also with such evident love, devotion, integrity, and high aspiration that watching it is kind of a duplex pleasure. I agree with him because the characters here are endearing. If you can't find a character that you don't identify with in some human form or some human aspect, the characters really aren't for you. But there's a human element to all of these characters that is really noticeable. It screams off of the screen. And Eric, you're 100% correct. This is the movie, this is the role that Topol was born to play. And, you know, he played it almost up until he passed away. I love the music that reminds me of childhood. It takes me back. I don't know. There's just something about this movie, too. This is really the last of the golden age of musicals. After Fiddler on the Roof, there really isn't another musical that is nominated for Best Picture. This really marks the end of an era, essentially, for Hollywood, where the producers of this movie weren't sold on making this movie because the musical had kind of died. But this movie was extremely successful, and I think it's based off of the characters. You know, the nostalgia factor plays a big role for me in my decision what I'm going to give it. I really do love the characters. I love how the movie's shot. I think it's beautifully shot. And a lot of it's shot in Yugoslavia. There are some scenes that are shot in Pinewood Studios, but you can kind of tell which ones. It's wonderfully shot, and it's a beautiful movie. I'm going to give it 4.5 hooks. It's definitely a movie that I thoroughly enjoy.
All right. Well, I hope everyone has enjoyed our discussion of Fiddler on the Roof. The next movie we're going to be doing, our third one in the series of people we've lost in 2023, is celebrating the career of Matthew Perry in The Whole Nine Yards. So hopefully you folks will enjoy that. Ted, tell us where they can find us on the World Wide Web.
Well, we can be found on X/Twitter at @HookedOn_movies. And whatever podcast format you're listening to us on, whether it be Spotify, Good Pods, Apple, leave us a 5-star rating or a review. It helps us get noticed. Yeah, it just, it helps us get our name out there. But also, too, word of mouth is a big way to get to advance. Because if a friend tells you about a podcast that you listen to, most likely they're going to tune in as well. And you never know. They may like us as well. So tell a friend.
Cool. Ken, Facebook, what's going on?
You join us on our Facebook page, Hooked on Movies. We will show our articles and clips from movies and trailers just to get you in the mood to listen to our podcast. I wanted to add some of the celebrities we've lost over the past year for 2023. We lost Bud Grant, Raquel Welch. I'll throw Harry Bonifani out there because he did have some roles. Tina Turner, who also, if you would think about it, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. William Friedkin. We've done a number of his movies. In fact, we thought about doing one of his movies again, The French Connection, which went up against this movie,
Fiddler on the Roof,
and beat it for Best Picture, which, to be honest with you, I totally disagree.
I disagree. French Connection should win.
I disagree. I was kind of bored senseless. Treat Williams, what? We lost him as
you
well.
You were bored senseless with French Connection?
Yeah, I was kind of bored with
French Connection 2 is boring. Not the first one.
Probably you're correct.
So, oh my goodness. All right, keep going.
Overrated car chasing.
Oh yeah. My goodness. Yeah, well, yeah, I'll give you that. But all right, whatever. Keep going.
There's just some more actors that we lost in the year of 2023. We may share some more in our next episode. But it always sucks to see careers and lives come to an end. But we are very appreciative of the art, and we thank those who provided that to us, except for maybe Robert Blake.
How dare you diss Beretta? Wow. How dare you diss Beretta? It's because he killed his wife.
So Pee-wee's Big Adventure, was that to the movie theater?
What?
Where he got caught?
What are you talking about?
Interesting. Is that Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
There's a different. There's a different movie version of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That one we're not doing. We're doing the 1985 release, I believe. Right, Ken?
Gotcha.
The kids' flick. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Not the adult version. Yes. Just to make sure.
You sick little bastard.
I know. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of Hooked on Movies. Thank you, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
See you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies.
Bye, everyone.